She sat at the far end of the dining table, and the silence was heavier than the silver candelabra between them. The Duke of Windhaven did not look at her. He never did. He read his correspondence while his soup grew cold, his expression carved from the same gray stone that built his ancestral halls. Alara placed her spoon down with careful quiet, but the tiny sound still echoed. He did not glance up. She had worn the ivory silk tonight. She had asked the maid to arrange her hair with the pearl-tipped pins he had once sent as a wedding gift, though a footman had delivered them wrapped in brown paper without a single word. She had done all these small, silent things, and still he stared at his letters as if she were a piece of furniture he had long forgotten to replace. A footman stepped forward to refill the Duke's glass. The servant's eyes flickered toward Alara and she caught it. Pity. Even the staff had begun to look at her that way. She was the Duchess of Windhaven, mistress of one of the largest estates in the county, and yet she had never felt more invisible. The Duke folded his correspondence, rose from his chair, and spoke his first words of the evening. "I will be in the study. Do not wait up." He was gone before she could answer. Alara remained seated, her hands folded in her lap, her chest hollow. Outside the tall windows, a soft spring rain began to fall. It whispered against the glass like secrets she was never allowed to hear. She had been married to Alaric Ashford, the Duke of Windhaven, for 11 months and 14 days. She had loved him for every single one. Tonight, something inside her finally broke. 11 months earlier, Alara had stood in a small, damp church wearing her late mother's wedding gown, the lace yellowed from years tucked inside a trunk. Her father had died 6 weeks before, leaving behind a crumbling barony and mountains of debt. She had two choices: watch her family's tenants lose their homes, or accept the startling offer from the reclusive Duke of Windhaven. She had never met him. She had only heard whispers, powerful, cold. A man who had buried a younger brother and then buried his heart alongside him. No one expected him to marry. Yet his solicitor had arrived at Alara's doorstep with a contract that promised to clear every debt, restore her father's land, and protect her mother's grave from being sold. In return, she would become his duchess. Her aunt had wept with relief. Her younger sister had clung to her hand. Alara had signed her name without a single tremor. She had told herself that duty could grow into something warmer, that time and patience could melt even the coldest reserve. She had believed it with the desperate faith of a girl who had lost everything and needed something to hope for. The wedding was brief and businesslike. The Duke said his vows without meeting her eyes. When the priest pronounced them man and wife, Alaric touched her hand for the briefest of moments, and even through her glove she felt how cold his fingers were. He released her immediately, as though the contact had pained him. He did not kiss the bride. That night she was shown to a beautiful suite of rooms in the east wing of Windhaven Abbey. They were grand and warm and entirely separate from his. Her husband did not visit. He did not send a note. The following morning he appeared at breakfast, greeted her politely, and asked if she had slept well. It was the beginning of a pattern that would slowly unravel her. In the first months, Alara tried. She woke early to join him at breakfast, though he rarely spoke more than a few clipped sentences. She asked about the estate, the tenants, the horses. He answered factually, never expanding, never inviting further conversation. She learned the names of his dogs, his steward, his favorite brandy. She asked the cook to prepare his favorite meals. She placed fresh flowers in his study, a quiet touch she thought he might notice. He never mentioned them. One evening, emboldened by a glass of wine and a sunset that turned the gardens gold, she touched his arm in the hallway. He went rigid. Not angry, not cruel. Simply rigid, like a man bracing for a blow. "Alaric," she said softly, "is something wrong? Have I displeased you?" He looked at her then. His eyes were the color of winter storms and just as unreadable. "You have done nothing wrong, Alara. I am simply not a man who offers warmth. I thought you understood the nature of this arrangement." I understand, she whispered, though her throat was tightening, but I had hoped. Hope is a dangerous thing, he said and walked away. She stood in that hallway until the candle in the sconce guttered out. By the sixth month, the hope had faded into a dull, persistent ache. She stopped asking him about his day. She stopped placing flowers in his study. She still attended meals because duty demanded it, but she no longer wore her prettiest gowns or asked the maid to arrange her hair in new styles. What was the point? He never looked at her long enough to notice. She began to spend her days elsewhere. The Windhaven estate was vast and beautiful, a rolling landscape of ancient oaks and tenant farms, and a village that had relied on the dukedom for generations. The previous Duchess, Alaric's mother, had been renowned for her charity work, but she had died many years ago, and her projects had fallen into neglect. Alara threw herself into resurrecting them. She visited the tenants, learning their names and their struggles. She organized repairs for leaking roofs and medicine for sick children. She started a small school in the village hall, using her own pin money to buy books and slates. The villagers, wary at first, began to warm to her. They called her the Quiet Duchess with affection. At Windhaven, no one called her anything at all. The first sharp wound came on a cold night in November. Alaric was hosting a dinner for several neighboring landowners. Men of influence he needed to impress for some political matter Alara did not fully understand. She stood beside him in the great hall, wearing a deep green gown that brought out the flecks of gold in her brown eyes. She had smiled until her cheeks ached, playing the gracious hostess, and for a few hours it almost felt real. Then Lady Elspeth Ashworth arrived. She was a widow, beautiful and confident, with a laugh that filled the room and a hand that lingered far too long on Alaric's sleeve. Throughout dinner, she sat to his right, leaning close, murmuring things that made his mouth twitch into something that was almost a smile. Alara watched from her seat at the far end of the table, invisible as always, while her husband gave another woman the attention he had denied his wife for months. During the port and cigars, Alara excused herself to fetch a shawl. On her way back, she passed the library and heard voices through the partially open door. Lady Elspeth's silky tone. You deserve warmth, Alaric, a real companion, not a girl forced upon you by circumstance. Alara froze. She waited for her husband's cold, dismissive reply, the words that would put this woman in her place. But Alaric said nothing. He simply laughed, low and soft, and the sound was more devastating than any cruelty could have been. Alara walked back to the dinner party on numb feet. She smiled at the remaining guests. She bid Lady Elspeth a perfectly pleasant farewell. And later, alone in her silent bedroom, she pressed her fist against her mouth and let the tears fall silently into her pillow. The next morning, she looked at her reflection and made a decision. She would no longer wait for a love that would never come. She would build a life for herself instead. The change was gradual at first. Alara no longer timed her mornings to coincide with Alaric's breakfast. She ate early, in the sunny little morning room, reading books or writing letters. She stopped seeking his opinion on estate matters and began making decisions herself, trusting her own judgment. When the steward came with reports, she requested copies and reviewed them alone. She poured her heart into the village school. The children adored her. She knew their names, their small triumphs, their sorrows. When little Thomas Miller's father died in a farming accident, she personally delivered food to the widow and sat with her for an hour, holding her hand while she wept. The villagers began to speak of the Duchess with a reverence they had never shown the distant Duke. At Windhaven Abbey, her absence was like a slowly spreading chill. Alaric noticed, though he would not have admitted it. He walked past the morning room one day and saw her laughing at something the housekeeper said. The sound caught him off guard. He could not remember the last time she had laughed in his presence. He told himself it was a good thing. She was settling in. She was finding her place. But a tiny, unwelcome thread of discomfort wove through his chest. One afternoon in late winter, Alara was in the gardens, bundled in a wool cloak, discussing plans for a new cottage garden with a young man named Nathaniel Thorne. He was the son of the former land steward, recently returned from London with modern agricultural ideas, and Alaric had employed him as an assistant. Nathaniel was kind-faced and earnest, with sandy hair and a ready smile, and he treated Alara with a respectful admiration that was impossible to miss. They were standing close, heads bent over a sketch, when Alaric rode into the courtyard and saw them. He pulled his horse to a stop, his gloved hands tightening on the reins. Alara looked up and met his gaze. For a breath, something flickered in the gray depths of his eyes, something sharp and unfamiliar. Then it vanished. "Your grace," Nathaniel said, bowing. "Thorne," Alaric's voice was clipped. He dismounted, handed the reins to a groom, and walked toward the abbey without another word. Alara felt a small, bitter satisfaction. Let him see. Let him wonder. She did not know that Alaric did not go to his study. He stood in the shadowed hallway, watching through the window as she continued her conversation with Nathaniel, her cheeks flushed from the cold, her expression open and engaged in a way it never was with him. His hands curled into fists. He forced them open. This was absurd. He had no right. He had made certain he would have no right. The following evening, Alaric appeared in the morning room just as Alara was finishing her solitary dinner. She looked up, startled. He rarely sought her out. "I thought we might dine together tomorrow," he said, his voice carefully neutral. "There is a matter I wish to discuss." Alara set down her fork. "Of course, you could have sent a note. I wanted to ask you in person." A month ago, that statement would have sent hope flooding through her veins. Now it only made her wary. She studied his face, the stern lines she had once found so compelling. He was still handsome, coldly, impossibly handsome, but she no longer felt the ache of longing when she looked at him. It was more like the memory of an old wound. "I will be there," she said quietly. He nodded, hesitated, and then left. Alara watched the empty doorway for a long time. She did not smile. She did not cry. She simply felt tired. The dinner was formal and stilted. Alaric asked about the village school. Alara answered politely. He inquired about the tenants. She provided details. It was a conversation between strangers who happened to share a name. When the dessert plates were cleared, Alaric cleared his throat. "Sir Nathaniel Thorne has proposed a drainage project for the lower fields. He will need to work closely with you on the tenant relocations. I trust that will not be an inconvenience." Alara tilted her head. "It is no inconvenience. Nathaniel is very capable." "Nathaniel," Alaric repeated the name as if testing its weight, "you are on familiar terms." "He has been a great help with the school. The children enjoy his visits." The Duke's jaw tightened almost imperceptibly. "You spend a great deal of time with him." Alara met his gaze directly. "I spend my time where it is useful. You have made it clear you do not require my company." A footman shifted uneasily near the sideboard. The fire crackled in the silence. Alaric set down his glass with a soft thud. "I have not forbidden your company." "No," Alara agreed, rising from her chair with quiet dignity. "You have simply never asked for it." She left him sitting alone at the long, empty table. That night, Alaric did not sleep. He paced his study, the fire dying to embers, a glass of brandy untouched. Her words echoed in his skull. "You have simply never asked for it." He thought of her in the garden with Nathaniel Thorne, the way the younger man's eyes had traced her profile with open admiration. Something hot and ugly twisted in Alaric's gut. He recognized it, though he had not felt it in years. Jealousy. He had no right to jealousy. He had built the walls between them stone by careful stone. He had believed he was protecting her, protecting himself, from the curse that seemed to follow anyone who grew too close to him. He had buried a brother whose laughter still haunted his dreams. He had watched his mother wither from grief until she followed Edmund to the grave. He had learned with brutal certainty that love was a prelude to loss. So when duty demanded he marry the penniless daughter of a dead baron, he had vowed to keep her safe by keeping her at arm's length. He would provide for her. He would honor her. He would never, ever allow himself to love her. But somewhere in the long, quiet months, she had crept past his defenses without his permission. He missed the sound of her voice at breakfast. He missed the flowers she used to place in his study. He missed her hope, her gentle persistence. The way she had once looked at him, as though he were a man worth loving. Now she looked at him as though he were a stranger. And someone else was looking at her, the way he had never allowed himself to. Spring crept over the estate, painting the gardens in soft pinks and greens. Alara was in the village nearly every day now. Nathaniel often accompanied her, carrying baskets or mending fences with the tenants. They worked easily together. He made her laugh. He asked her opinions and actually listened. She did not think of him as anything more than a friend, but his presence was a balm on a wound she had stopped acknowledging. One afternoon, a traveling fair set up in the meadow beyond the village. The children begged Alara to come. She agreed, and Nathaniel escorted her, the two of them walking through the stalls of ribbon and baked goods while the village folk smiled knowingly. Alara was watching a puppet show, laughing as a wooden knight battled a dragon, when she felt a prickle at the back of her neck. She turned. Alaric stood at the edge of the crowd. He was dressed in riding clothes, his boots dusty, as though he had come in a hurry. His eyes were fixed on Nathaniel, and the expression in them was one of barely contained fury. He strode forward and the villagers parted like wheat before a scythe. Nathaniel straightened, his easy smile fading. "Your Grace," he said carefully, "I did not expect you at the fair." "Evidently," Alaric's voice was ice, he turned to Alara, "I would like to escort my wife back to the abbey." It was the first time he had called her that outside of formal introductions. The word wife felt like a claim, and it made her spine stiffen. "I am in the middle of an outing," she said calmly. "The children are expecting me at the pie contest." "The children," Alaric said through his teeth, "will survive without you for one afternoon." The crowd had gone quiet. A few older women exchanged glances. Alara felt the heat of humiliation rising in her cheeks, but beneath it was a spark of pure, cold anger. She stepped closer to her husband, lowering her voice so only he could hear. "You do not get to ignore me for a year and then play the jealous husband at a village fair. I am not your possession." His eyes flared. For a moment she thought he might shout, but instead his voice dropped into something raw and unsteady. "No, you are not, but I am asking you, Alara, come home." The word home almost broke her. She swallowed hard, nodded once, and followed him to his horse without looking back at Nathaniel. They rode in silence, the spring breeze doing nothing to cool the tension. When they reached the abbey, Alaric dismounted and helped her down, his hands lingering on her waist just a moment too long. She pulled away. "Why now?" she demanded, her voice shaking. "Why do you suddenly care where I go and who I speak to? You have done nothing but ignore me since our wedding day. I sat at your table for months trying to reach you and you looked straight through me. I heard you with Lady Elspeth. I heard you laugh while she insulted our marriage and you said nothing. Do you understand how that felt? Do you even care?" Alaric stood very still. His face had gone pale beneath its tan, and his hands hung stiffly at his sides. "I heard her," he said hoarsely. "I laughed because I did not know how else to respond. She was wrong, Alara. She was wrong about you. I should have corrected her. I should have done 1,000 things I did not do." "Then why?" Alara's voice broke on the word. "Why have you kept me in a cage of courtesy? What did I ever do to deserve your indifference?" He looked at her then, truly looked, and for the first time she saw the cracks in his armor. His eyes were full of ghosts. "You did nothing," he said. "You were perfect, that was the problem." She stared at him, uncomprehending. "Come with me," he said quietly, "please." He led her to the library, a vast room she rarely entered. He unlocked a drawer in his desk and withdrew a small, leather-bound journal, its pages worn and water-stained. He placed it in her hands. "This belonged to my brother Edmund. Read it." Alara opened the journal, her fingers trembling. The handwriting was youthful and exuberant, full of sketches and exclamation marks. As she turned the pages, the entries grew darker. Arguments with Alaric, accusations, a secret duel Edmund had fought over a woman. And then the final entry, written the morning of his death. Alaric found out about the duel. He was so angry. He said he would tell Father and put a stop to my recklessness. I screamed at him that I hated him, that he was not my keeper, that I wished he were dead instead of mother. I took my horse and rode into the storm. I just wanted to hurt him. I never meant to. The entry cut off. The following pages were blank. Alara closed the journal, her heart pounding. He died that night. Alaric nodded, his voice a raw scrape. His horse threw him in the ravine. They found him at dawn. The last words I ever spoke to him were in anger, and the last words he spoke to me were hate. I held his body in the mud and swore I would never again allow myself to care so deeply for anyone. Caring is a poison. It destroys everything it touches. She understood then, all the distance, all the coldness. He had not been rejecting her, he had been punishing himself. "I told myself I would protect you by keeping you away from me," he said, his voice cracking. "I thought if I let myself love you, something terrible would happen. And then I realized too late that the terrible thing had already happened. I was losing you anyway, and it was my own doing." Alara's eyes burned. She stepped toward him, the journal pressed against her chest. "You should have told me. You should have trusted me with this pain instead of leaving me to believe I was unwanted." "I know." His voice was barely a whisper. "I am a coward. I have been a coward for years. Can you ever forgive me?" She looked at the man before her, the proud duke reduced to a shadow of guilt and longing. She remembered the weeks of silence, the nights of lonely tears, the humiliation. But she also saw the boy who had lost his brother, the man who had buried his heart alive because he did not know how to grieve. Forgiveness was not a switch to be flipped. It was a road, but for the first time she could see the path. "I can try," she said softly, "but you must promise me something."
"Anything."
"No more silence, no more walls. If you are hurting, you tell me. If you are afraid, you let me in. I cannot fight for a marriage alone." He reached out and took her hand, his touch tentative as if she might shatter. "I promise." The days that followed were strange and tender. Alaric did not transform overnight into an effusive romantic hero. He was still reserved, still prone to long silences. But he ate breakfast with her now, and he asked about her day. He walked with her in the gardens and listened while she talked about the drainage project, even offering suggestions. He did not laugh often, but when he did, it was a quiet, rusty sound that made her chest ache. Nathaniel Thorne, perceptive and gracious, stepped back without being asked. He requested a transfer to the northern farms, and Alaric granted it with a curt nod that was almost grateful. Alara bid Nathaniel farewell with a friendly handshake and sincere thanks. He would find a woman who could return his affection. She was not that woman. She had already given her heart, long ago, to a man who was only now learning to accept it. One evening in early summer, Alara was in the library reading by the fire. Alaric entered, a leather box in his hands. He sat beside her, his knee nearly brushing hers, and opened the box. Inside lay a necklace of sapphires and seed pearls, delicate as starlight. "This belonged to my mother," he said. "She wore it on the day she married my father. I should have given it to you on our wedding day. I am giving it to you now if you will accept it." Alara's breath caught. She looked from the necklace to his face and saw the vulnerability there, the fear of rejection, the fragile hope. "I will accept it," she said, "on one condition." His brow furrowed. "Name it." "Stop carrying Edmund's journal with you everywhere. You keep it in your pocket like a penance. It is time to let the guilt rest. He would not want you to suffer forever. Alaric's throat worked. He reached into his coat and withdrew the worn journal, staring at it. Then slowly, he placed it on the mantelpiece, beneath a miniature of his brother. "For memory," he said quietly, "not for punishment." She nodded and he fastened the necklace around her throat. His fingers brushed her collarbone, warm and gentle, and she shivered. "Ilara," he said, his voice low, "I cannot change the past, but I can give you my future. It is not much. I am still learning, but it is yours if you want it." She turned to face him, her eyes shining. "I have wanted it for a very long time." He cupped her face in his hands, and when he kissed her, it was not cold or hesitant. It was the kiss of a man who had been drowning and finally found the shore. The summer unfolded like a flower opening to the sun. The villagers noticed the change, how the Duke now accompanied his wife on her visits, how his stern face softened when she spoke. The school flourished, and Alaric funded a new building himself, carving her name into the cornerstone. She protested, but he insisted. "Let everyone know," he said, "that my wife is the heart of Windhaven." At a harvest celebration in the village hall, he danced with her in full view of the tenants, his hand resting on her waist with possessive pride. The older women dabbed their eyes. The children giggled. Ilara laughed, and the sound was free and bright. Later, walking home under a canopy of stars, she slipped her hand into his. "Thank you," she said, "for fighting your way back to me." He stopped in the lane and drew her close, resting his chin atop her head. "Thank you," he replied, his voice rough with emotion, "for waiting long enough for me to find the way." Autumn painted the estate in russet and gold. One crisp morning, Ilara stood in the new schoolroom, watching the children practice their letters. A small hand tugged her skirt. It was Lily Miller, little Thomas's younger sister. "Your Grace," Lily whispered, "is it true you're going to have a baby?" Ilara knelt down, her heart skipping. She had only suspected it herself that very morning, a quiet, blooming certainty she had not yet shared with anyone. "Where did you hear that, sweetling?" "The Duke told my mama. He said he hoped it was a girl with your eyes." Lily beamed. "He looked so happy, Your Grace. We all did." Ilara rose, her hand pressing against her stomach, a wave of emotion threatening to undo her. She found Alaric outside, leaning against the stone wall, watching the hills. When he saw her face, he straightened. "You know," she said. He came to her, his steps urgent but his touch infinitely gentle as he took her hands. "I only told Mrs. Miller because I could not contain it. I saw the glow in you, and I dared to hope. Forgive me for speaking before asking." "There is nothing to forgive," her voice trembled. "We are going to have a child." He pulled her into his arms, and for the first time since she had known him, Alaric Ashford wept. Not from grief, but from a joy so fierce it had finally broken the last chains around his heart. She held him, this powerful, broken, beautiful man, and felt the past dissolve like morning mist. In the winter, when the first snow fell, Ilara sat by the library fire, her hands resting on the swell of her belly. Alaric knelt beside her, reading aloud from a book of sonnets, his voice a low, steady melody. The sapphire necklace sparkled at her throat. Outside, the world was white and quiet. Inside, there was warmth. "I was so sure I had lost you," he said, closing the book. "Every day I wake up and marvel that you stayed." "I almost didn't," she admitted. "The night you left me alone at that dinner, something inside me shattered. I stopped waiting. I stopped hopping. And then you came to find me at the fair. You said, 'Come home.' That was the moment I started to hope again." He pressed his lips to her hair. "I was a fool. I wasted so much time." "We have time now," she said. "Years and years of time. We will fill them with as much love as they can hold." And they did. The baby arrived in spring, a girl with storm gray eyes and a stubborn chin. They named her Hope, because she was proof that even the coldest winters yield to blossom. Alaric held his daughter as though she were made of spun glass and promises, and the look he gave Ilara over the tiny, downy head was one of pure, unguarded love. The estate flourished. The village prospered. The school taught not only letters but the story of a duchess who had been brave enough to stop waiting and a duke who had been wise enough, at last, to follow his heart. On their 10th anniversary, they walked through the gardens at twilight, hope dancing ahead of them like a firefly. "Are you happy?" Alaric asked, though he already knew the answer. Ilara smiled, slipping her arm through his. "I am exactly where I was always meant to be." He kissed her temple, and the years fell away. They were simply a man and a woman who had found each other in the quiet, who had weathered silence and sorrow, and who had built a love strong enough to last forever. The stars came out, one by one, and Windhaven Abbey glowed with golden light. Inside there was laughter. Inside there was peace. Inside there was a love that had been waited for, fought for, and finally, beautifully, found. If you enjoyed this story, don't forget to give it a like and subscribe to the channel. Also, let us know in the comments which country you're watching from. Your support means a lot to us. Thank you for watching, and see you in the next amazing story.